Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 124 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And I am joined once again, my partner in crime, a backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on?
Just hanging on a Sunday.
Yeah,
hanging on a Sunday here in
the afternoon,
like Queen sang. Yeah, and a nice sunny day here in New Jersey. Finally,
great, awesome. I'm happy to hear that. Anyways, as you can see, we have a guest with us today, and I'm really excited to have him on. He's been a fixture on 89.1 WFDU for a while now. He's got a really cool oldies show, which he'll probably tell us about here in a little bit. And you also may know him from his appearance on Glass Onion on John Lennon, the great show hosted by Anthony Rotunno. He is David Ghosty Wills. David, how you doing?
I'm doing good. And as Andy said, it is a warm and beautiful day here in New Jersey. I gotta slide my pun in there, and it's great to finally join you guys rather than just passively listening and yelling at my iPhone but now I can actually join in, so I'll try to keep the yelling to him. It's yelling not with antagonism, but yelling with enthusiasm, you know. I listen and go, go Tom, you know, like that. You buy those McCartney threes.
Oh, and boy, he did all freaking 10 of them or whatever he has.
Right,
it was enough.
Yeah, I know.
Anyways, so
I was expecting to see them dangling from the fan above.
He has so many extra he could do that from each
right
thing.
Yeah, McCartney 3 mobile.
Like blade. Yeah.
You know, when you buy the 5 copies of the reimagined one, you can do that too.
There you go.
Right. Only one. I'm only doing one copy.
Yeah, right. He says that.
On vinyl. And then I got to get the CD as well.
Oh, you know? Of course.
Anyways, but before we get to today's topic, which is going to be focusing on the Russian album and Run Devil Run. So we're going to be talking a little 50s, a little, you know, roots, McCartney roots albums, if you will. We're going to talk about a couple news items that just popped up over the last couple days. And by the time this is on next Saturday, it will be old news by then, but just to get it out of the way now. But we're going to get a second Granddad's Dude book, and it's called Grand Dude's Green Submarine, and kind of, you know, stealing from a song that's been it's over 50 years old now. But you know, be honest with you, you know, I've got the first Grand Dude book. I really haven't read it yet, but you know, but seeing that you know, it's McCartney's name on it, I'll probably end up getting it and putting it next to the first Grand Dude book. I don't know about you, Andy. Did you get the Grand Dude book, Andy?
I bought it for my 3-year-old nephew, and then he could read it.
Oh, there you go.
That was it, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's coming a fad, you know, these, you know, popular recording artists, you know, releasing, you know, children's books. I think Madonna's put out a few, and those Julie Lennon's done a couple.
Yeah,
himself too, you know. But
I like Madonna's Like a Little Virgin. I thought that was cute. No, I'm kidding. But the Grand Dude, the first one, there was an audio component, right? And
yes.
McCartney, isn't there an audio book? I mean, the book is all of 12 pages long.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long that disc is, but I'm assuming that there'll be another one. And since this is, he's doing all the voices and reading, he's going to.
Yeah, did he do the audio? Did he do the audio book version?
Version.
He did.
Yep.
Good.
Yep. Yeah, but I think it was only released in the UK. if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. That's, you know, that's, if you like that stuff, go for it. If, you know, you know, if not, pass, like I would.
And, you know, we were joking about the McCartney 3 Reimagined. We're going to get another kind of like reimagined album here, and this is going to be out in May. And what this is this is a 50th anniversary tribute to the Ram album, and this is being put together by ex-bandmate Denny Sywell. It's called Ram On, the 50th anniversary tribute to Paul and Linda McCartney's Ram. And it's you know, you got some original players on there, like Denny Sywell himself. You got Dave Spinoza. You got the original trumpet player, Marvin Stamm, you know, and some other, you know, popular names on here. And the cool thing is it's just not the album, but it's also Another Day in Old Woman Why as well. So you're going to get 15 tracks on here. And like I said, this is going to be out in May on Cherry Red Records, which I believe that was the company that also put out the recent McGear reissue.
Yeah. Is he also doing Road All Night? Because I know he loves that. Is he doing Road All Night?
You know, I could only dream that he was going to do that. But if we get him on, you know, maybe we'll talk to him about that track, because that's a great 8-minute song right there.
Yeah. No, I know he spoke a lot about it when the album was repackaged. So, you know, right, when it got re-released. So
is it just the original folks, or are there, you know, fresh indie artists involved?
Exactly. There's let's see here. We've got Joey Stagnato of the Pixies. If I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Santiago.
Yeah, right? Thank you. Yeah, okay. Pixies, Davey Johnston of Elton John Band. We got
awesome.
Yeah, Will Lee, Eric Dover, formerly of Jellyfish, you know, Carney Wilson, you know, so you got some, you know, some others on there. So it'd be interesting to hear. Hopefully we'll hear something soon to kind of give us an idea of what it's going to sound like.
Do we know if there's going to be a Half Speed remaster too coming out in May? Is that rumor or confirmed right now?
I saw that was going to be released on a record store day, but that's record store day is now in June, so there's going to be two record store days this year. As far as I know, I'm sure the Black Friday one will still happen, but we're going to get one in June and July. And I did hear we were going to get a 50th anniversary half speed master of Ram. So
okay,
I have to wonder though, with the Reimagined McCartney 3 record, mm-hmm, now this one, which is not Paul sanctioned, this is just done independently. But I'm wondering if the Reimagined McCartney 3 does well, if we don't see Reimagined Memory Almost Full or Reimagined Chaos and Creation, because
interesting,
McCartney does have juice with like the indie rock crowd. Right. And I could see him pulling together all these people, you know,
to do,
Post Malone and Billie Eilish or whatever to, you know, to introduce his music. It's not a bad idea, you know, like that McCartney 3, what was this? What's the artist? Duncan, somebody who did The Kiss of Venus?
Fike or something like that.
Right. Yeah. So I'm showing my age. I have no idea who he is, never heard of him before. But I liked it. I saw that video and wow. You know, I said, I actually kind of like it a little better than the album version, to be honest. Wow. And I like the album version, but I said, this has got some unique qualities to it. So I don't know if I'll buy it per se, but I certainly wouldn't mind hearing it. So I'll wait for you to get, you know, one or two copies or six copies or whatever and start passing them out, you know, at the next fest.
Well, you know, he is the PR man, you know, so he is constantly getting his name out there. You know, I mean, when I first started the show with my cousin, it's just like, are we going to do it as a group, you know, as the four? Are we just going to concentrate on one? And we just, you know, decided to go McCartney, because it's just like, it seems like every week or every month, there's just always something to talk about. There's really never been a lull time for us to talk about something new or
coming down the pike or something.
McCartney's done
everything but wrestle the Undertaker, you know, to promote a record. And that might be the next step. Undertaker comes out of retirement, you know.
Yeah.
Listen, man.
Yeah, listen, Taker. Oh, God. Not a bad idea, though, if he gets newer, you know, current artists who kind of dive back into his catalog to reintroduce that music to the generation. I mean, just even that would be something cool to see him do. Not just whatever he's doing now. Like, you know, let new artists cover, you know, Wing stuff, or, you know, because let that music get out there. You know, that'd be cool.
There does seem to be a greater acceptance among the indie rock crowd for Paul's solo material than, say, how it was initially received by the classic rock crowd of the early 70s, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously times have changed and the opinions have changed and been rewritten and everything else, but yeah, I could see that happening. There's probably, I mean, who knows? There'll probably be some kind of reappraisal of, you know, Give My Regards to Broad Street or something. You know,
that's going to come out. Yeah. The movie's going to be the next Citizen Kane, you know, all of a sudden.
Right, right. Yeah. Peter Jackson will get a hold of it.
Right. He'll make a new cut of it. Yeah.
There is actually a brilliant movie in here somewhere, but it got lost.
It's all on the cutting room floor.
Right. All this great stuff was just sitting there, all this passionate acting from Paul.
You know, is it historical revisionism a little bit? Yeah, it is, but
it's fun.
It's fun. You know, it's like, oh, of course, Let It Be was great. You know, it was just a wonderful time. It was fantastic. We played together. Like, okay, we get it. You're trying to put a dress on it. I got it.
Well, I think from what I gather, the film is just the Get Back movie is going to be. You know, the bad time at Twickenham, and then the majority of it is going to be the good time
in the studio,
right? So to give it that happy ending, so you get, like, you know, 20 minutes of badness and then a lot of fun to give it an upbeat happy ending.
As long as we just get the actual original film, which I don't know if we're going to get that, you know, included.
I mean, they said we will, I mean, at a later time.
That's the
important thing. That's the important thing. I mean, I don't care if it's in the box set or if it's separate. I mean, what's important to me is that the original does get released.
Yeah, you can't whitewash history. Film was made and it should be available to look at and say, okay, this at the time, this is what they put out.
Yeah, I mean, both of them are going to be valid because, I mean, they're both things that happened. So it's just going to, you know, it depends on what mood you're in. You know, am I wearing a black turtleneck and looking sullen? Then I'll watch the original film. If I'm with cracking open some beers with some pals, we'll watch the Peter Jackson
movie. Watch the new one. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Right. So,
yeah, cool. Good stuff coming down the pike for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Some news. David, let's talk about you, your career as a DJ personality. First, where does one get a nickname of Ghosty?
You know, there's no real story for that. Somebody said you have to pick a pseudonym, you know, and everybody usually chooses like an actual name. And I thought, I'm a disembodied voice floating through the airwaves. And I'll call myself Ghosty. But that Ghosty, I discovered, you know, it is a word, it's an adjective. So I thought, well, that's strange. You know, I really should be a noun. Everybody's a noun, but I've chosen an adjective. It's like calling yourself sad, you know. But so I host a show called The Vintage Rock and Pop Shop on WFDU FM. It's in Andy's backyard. And the show is, I play top hits, lost gems, and then some from the years 1945 through 1975.
Wow.
Why that cutoff date of 75 when today I played a track from 1988 and then one from 93. But just to give people a general idea of where we are. So the pop hits of the early 50s, the pre-rock and roll stuff, I love that too. The vintage rock and roll, the great 60s. The 70s, right before punk happens. And nothing against punk. I mean, I did a punk and new wave show for years, but, you know, I kind of got sick of it. So now we're doing this. Yeah.
Talk about that pre, you know, those pre-Beatle years, you know, that kind of music. Because, I mean, I heard a lot. I mean, I listened to your show today. I heard a lot of it on there today. And the one track I hadn't heard in years, Leader of the Pack.
Sure.
It's amazing hearing that song again. But, I mean, But also the rock and roll of that time too, which led to, I mean, which, you know, the four Beatles, they heard, they loved it. I mean, it was a big influence on them. You know, talk about that genre for a minute.
Well, sure. I mean, well, the Leader of the Pack would have been a late example of the girl group sound, I guess. But yeah, all of the early music of the Beatles is firmly rooted in that. You know, what we would consider, strangely, we don't call it classic rock, which is really what it is, you know, that golden age of rock and roll, I guess. And also there's a huge influence, I feel, I wish somebody would write the book, of the pop and slash standards music on the Beatles music. And, you know, everything from that last chord and She Loves You, which George Martin said came out of the Andrews Sisters, and you can hear it in songs like Michelle. You know, they have these non-rock influences, which are kind of downplayed for whatever reason. But that early pop of the 1950s, I'm a big fan of, and also a big fan of British rock and roll pre-Beatles, which is kind of unknown in America, but I've become like the de facto American guy who talks about Billy Fury and Marty Wilde and those guys.
Cliff Richard.
Cliff Richard and champions their records.
You mean there was actually was British rock and roll records before the Beatles?
British rock and roll.
You know, there's quotes saying, oh, there was no such thing as British rock and roll record, but there was.
Not only that, but they were recording in Studio 2 of Abbey Road and, you know, writing their own songs. Groups are writing their own. Billy Fury, who's actually from Liverpool,
right?
Wrote every single song on his debut album. And he was a big, big star, and he scored 20 top 10 hits in Britain. So he actually rivals the Beatles in terms of success.
Yeah. So the myth is that I guess those pre-Beatle groups in England that just did kind of crappy versions of American rock and roll, is that myth? Is it partially true?
No, there was a lot of that in the very beginning, but it wasn't long before some of them, like Cliff and the Shadows, were writing their own stuff. Marty Wilde.
Sure.
His own stuff. Billy Fury, you know, eventually they just ran out of.
And these were all artists that were in that Larry Parnes stable.
Most of them, yeah, with the names like Billy Fury and Dickie Pride and Vince Eager, they have that, right?
Yeah,
the Shadows were of their own thing, but yeah.
Why do you think none of those were able to connect in the U.S.?
Well, some of them came over, but. I know when Cliff and the Shadows, the two times they came to tour here, the first time they appeared on Ed Sullivan. And Ed had seen the movie The Young Ones, and there's a tribute to Music Hall at the end of the movie. And rather than have them do a rock song, he wanted them to do this tribute to vaudeville and Music Hall. So people watching it had no idea that they were a rock and roll act. The second time they came over, it just happened to coincide with the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh, wow.
So that tour, as you can imagine, yeah, nobody went. And they were on Ed Sullivan again at that point. But people were preoccupied with, you know, the eventual, the end of the world, you know.
Right.
So, and as for the other ones, I mean, Marty Wilde had a song called Bad Boy, which is a top 40 hit here. And I know Billy Fury came over and met Elvis. And, you know, they had mild hits. But I think a lot of the reason that those guys are forgotten, even in Britain, because I've talked to Clem Cattini, who was the drummer for the Tornadoes. They actually have the first number one single in America by a British group, which is Telstar.
Telstar, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
produced by Joe Meek.
Joe Meek. And he said that even in England, that pre-Beatles music is forgotten. And I think it's because most of your history of rock and roll has been written by Americans. And those acts weren't really successful. And then here in America, and then those books about the history of rock and roll became influential in Britain. So I think that's kind of what happened. But I'm doing my part to, you know, bring it back. And hopefully there will be a book from me one of these days.
Hopefully.
And I'll make sure to produce it in multiple covers for Tom to purchase.
Yeah, and I think it's great that your show focuses on that era. Because look at Tom, you can't catch it.
Just make sure there's a swirl edition, okay?
Oh,
I know.
My God.
I did not. You know what? I did not think that I was going to come on here and just roast Tom.
Yeah, he's so.
But I can't help so it because I hear the stories.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
The suitcase alone is just, you know, one after another. You know, I mean,
if it's very easy.
If you're going to write a book, make sure you do a suitcase edition as well.
It's David. It's very easy to roast him because he's just he's a sucker yes. for it.
Wait, did you get the suitcase? Did you get the Egypt Station suitcase?
Oh, absolutely,
edition?
I sure did.
You did. Okay.
Oh, he did. That's like legendary status now. That thing, yeah. You know, that thing is.
I salute you. I mean, that's how I envisioned myself years ago. Yeah.
Right. And just a sneak peek, wait until you see Ethan's thumbnail for Egypt Station for when we rank the tracks from Egypt Station.
Oh, God wow. Almighty, really? Oh, yeah. Lord Almighty.
Because at some point, I made the decision not to be a completist. I want to say maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And I said, you know what? I think I'm just not going to be a completist anymore. And believe me, I get pangs of sadness when something is announced, and you know, especially with McCartney, and there's like one track that I don't own, you know, right. And I have to learn to accept that I'm not going to own it, but technically if it's on YouTube, I kind of do.
Yeah, right. Like this to get the one track that's not on anything else.
Right. Exactly.
No, well, listen, you're at peace with that decision, David. That's good to see because clearly Tom and I are not at that point in our lives.
Right.
You are, but you're at that place and God, you know, maybe one day we'll get there too, but good on you for actually saying, you know what? I'm done.
Right. Yeah. I don't have any more room. You know, I'm paying for storage.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
Also, you know, I'd like to eat more than just canned goods. So that's my hope. Yeah.
Well, Tom can help you out there because, you know, he's like the master, you know, he's the chef. So he can whip up some meals for you.
Oh, there it is. Well, that's
fresh.
Right. Okay.
Send them on Fresh Direct. And there you go.
Okay. There you go. All right. We'll get some dry ice and we'll ship it out to you tomorrow. There you go.
But like I was saying, I just think it's very cool that your show showcases that era. I mean, you do all the eras, as you said, but really that kind of that pre-Beatles era of rock and roll, especially in England, is so forgotten about, especially on people in this country. So if you're making people aware of it, I think that's great because it's a period of music. And as somebody who lived in Liverpool, I got to, you know, for 2 years, I got to meet a lot of people over there. I've seen the statue of Billy Fury down there.
Right.
At the bottom of the pier there. So it's really nice to see all that. So it's nice to see that there's somebody else here in America who actually appreciates that era as well.
Yeah, I'm going to change. Thank you. I'm going to change minds one by one. You know? I don't know. I have 700 million people. I'll do my best.
Yes.
You're getting there. Here you go. Keep going, my friend. Keep going. But yeah, so great show. Loved it. And what was the...
Thank you.
It was 89.1, right?
That's right. 89.1 or WFDU.FM online.
Okay, you can hear it online, but if you're in that area, I mean, you can just New Jersey, New York is pretty much
where New Jersey, New York, Connecticut. Yeah, you can listen. We go right into those areas, and you can also go to my YouTube channel, Ghost ETMRS, over on YouTube, and there are hundreds and hundreds of past interviews from the
great.
Show. So
we'll
there's
sure.
What's the YouTube channel again, David? What is it?
It's Ghosty TMRS, which the old name of the show was That Modern Rock Show when I was playing punk and new wave and things like that. Okay. Now it's Vintage Rock and Pop Rebound Backwards. There's...
Oh, did we lose him?
Uh-oh.
Frozen.
All right, give it a second.
Yeah. Oh, great channel, though. Wow.
Yeah.
I just pulled it up.
Frozen.
Oh, you're back.
Oh, okay. All right.
For a second.
I didn't. I was continuing to speak, and then I realized. I said, "It's finally happened. I've completely alienated everybody who's watching this."
No. We got you. You're back.
Oh, you're back.
Okay.
You're back. So, but we'll make sure we'll share the YouTube link when we post this episode. So.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, maybe you guys just censored me. You know, I was just talking about my show and you were like, you know, the heck with this guy with his self-promotion.
No.
Let's just pause it.
No.
You have a lot of great playlists on your channel though. Cliff Richard, Rory Storm, you have one on Jethro Tull, James Bond. Lots of great playlists on your channel. I just pulled it up, and we just subscribed on Two Legs. So.
Oh, awesome! And by the way, if anybody's interested, that Rory Storm, it's a radio documentary I put together about Rory Storm, featuring his roadie, guy called J-Mo Jameson, and Anthony Hogan, who wrote a book called From a Storm to a Hurricane, which was all about the saga of Rory Storm and the Hurricanes.
Oh, awesome. Oh, you got 39 videos on the Beach Boys. Oh, I'm going to have fun on this channel.
Yeah. Had a lot of Beach Boys on.
Yeah, I see that. Cool. Very cool.
Very good. So we're just going to talk about a couple times where, you know, McCartney went back to his roots and, you know, performed these songs on two albums that, you know, we all know. And we got, the Russian album here. We got Run, Double, Run. And looks like Ghosty's got a copy right there as well. And, you know, we've listened a couple times. I'll be honest with you. You know, I tend to listen to this one a little bit more than this one. But, you know, going back, you know, we'll talk more about it. But, I mean, it's not terrible, but we'll talk about it in a second. But, again, you know, Paul going to his roots in 87, we all know the in 86, the, you know, Press to Play didn't do as well as he was hoping it would. And then, you know, he had a failed sessions with Phil Ramone that really only produced Once Upon a Long Ago and Back on My Feet, some other good stuff too, but you know, not really deemed, you know, good enough to put on a record. So what does he do? He gets a bunch of artists together and just jams, and then just decides to put together a record of oldies, which again, Linda's a big fan of those oldies songs as well.
Stuff, so, yeah. Very interesting period. Like a lot of people like to say that like Broad Street, Press to Play era was like the lowest point of the 80s for him. I think this 87 period was like his oh shit moment. Like, what am I doing? He has a new manager at that point, Richard Ogden, who comes in and kind of says, look, clear the decks, get with Costello, write a song. They do the all the best kind of promotional. They put that whole package together and then they jump into this. So I think this period really was kind of like the lowest point of the 80s for him in terms of where his direction was going. He wasn't really sure. He just cleared the decks and then jumped into a brand new project with a brand new band and did it like in 2 days.
And from what I understand, this was not recorded with the intention of releasing this as the Russian album. It was done primarily just to blow off some steam, you know, maybe test out new band members. He was thinking ahead to touring, and it was only who was it that was it the new manager who pressed it up as sort of a gag that it was a Russian album, and then McCartney just went with the idea? I think that was the...
Yeah, I mean, the Russian idea of it came a little later, I mean, because I think it was at first he wanted to, you know, make the album and make it look like a bootleg that came into the UK from Russia, you know, hence the, you know, the flimsy cardboard sleeve, you know, and maybe, you know, I like to think that, I mean, I joke on the production a lot, but maybe, I feel like maybe that was on purpose to make it sound more like a bootleg than, you know, an actual real, you know, solid recording like Run, Double, Run.
Well, it worked because it became one of the most bootlegged records that he ever released. And what was funny about it for me is that I'm sure, like you guys, my story with this, with the Russian album begins really with, well, first hearing about it on television. I remember Entertainment Tonight did a feature on it because Paul was doing like a Russian rock line radio show or something to that. And Mary Hart was narrating this story. You know, Paul McCartney has really, I mean, this is Tom Hinati's worst nightmare. Paul McCartney has released an album, but you can't get it. It's a new album.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't get it. You have to be in Russia. Right.
Yeah. That would have been his. That's his kryptonite if he was old enough back then.
Right. So,
but
yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just to say, for me, back when, you know, I was like, I had to have everything. Yeah. See there. I said, what am I going to do? You know, I need to have this. I'm not going over to the Soviet Union. I don't have any friends in Russia. So like Tom, I went to the fest, and back then, this would never happen today, but you know, there I was, this was, it had to be what, 88, right?
Yeah.
It had to be like Beetlefest 88, I suppose. And there was an older gentleman who came up to me. I was, you know, 17, 18, and came up to me and said, you know, would you like to come up to my room in the hotel? And I can get you the Paul McCartney Russian album. And
market.
And let me just say, like, you know, nowadays, if that happened to me, or I saw that happening to someone, I would call the police. You know, I would step in and say something's amiss here. But in 1988, I mean, I couldn't go up to this guy's room fast enough. You know, it was all I could do to keep me off of the elevator. And not only that, when I got there to his room, that's exactly what was going on. He was selling bootlegs out of his luggage. And I bought the Russian album on cassette.
Oh.
So, because I was not, I didn't have, you know, I whatever it was, $25 or, I mean, it was actually going for even more than that, I think, Ben.
Really? But I bought, back then?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, I think it was going for more, but I spent like $7 on a Maxell UR90 cassette of the Russian album. And, you know, it was just awesome to listen to something that most Beatle fans were not hearing right then there. I felt like I was part of an exclusive club.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if that might have tainted my initial reception to the album, because at first I was like, this is the greatest thing that's ever been recorded. It's so cool. It's the best thing McCartney's done in years. And the New York Times said that with a glowing review. And I kind of feel like the bloom is off the rose with this album, you know?
Well, with perspective and time, and if, you know, obviously your opinions always change a little bit, but in the moment, you're always like, this is the greatest thing ever, you know?
Right.
Well, like I said, to your point, I mean, you weren't getting this. You weren't getting this. I mean, it's only released in Russia. Really, I do think I don't recall when the Club Sandwich people got it, but they were also get it, and I'll show one of those in a second. But in a way, you were kind of getting pieces of it via the 12-inch single. So, like, if you have, you know, the Once Upon a Long Ago, you have you have Lottie Miss Claudie, Kansas City. If you have I Want to Cry, you know, so you did kind of get bits and pieces of it here and there.
The other Once Upon a Long Ago single has the Midnight Special and Don't Get Around Much Anymore, so they were scattering out there, you know.
Right.
But yeah, and I think the expectations, because it was essentially like a bootleg record for a while, the expectations were kind of low on this album, you know, because you didn't expect it to be you know, of the same production caliber as Tug of War or something like that.
No.
You sort of filed it away with your other bootlegs, which were of dubious sound quality to begin with. So, but now you listen to it and I don't know. I mean, it kind of has a strange antiseptic sound to it.
I was just going to say that, David. I listened to both this morning and like Run Devil Run and that. It's got a very sterile sound to it. You know, it's like it sounds okay, but it's just very sterile. Whereas Run Devil Run is like, whoa, like
it's right in your face. You know?
So it's a clean recording. It's very sterile. It just it's time has not aged this record well, I don't think.
And there are some choices that are odd. You know, like it's almost as if McCartney discovered this new delay pedal or something, so you have him doing that, ain't that a shame over and over again. I think that happens a couple of times on there, and you know, it sounds like, you know, if you and your buddies got together and made a record and were just goofing around, but because it's Paul McCartney, it has, you know,
Well, much more weight to it. Yeah, and that's the thing. When you finally hear it, you know, when you think McCartney, you think, you know, clean production, you know, well thought of, you know, production. And here's the this is the club. I think this is the club sandwich one.
Edition.
So that's pretty cool to have as well. But I'll tell you, when I think of Russian album, I think really good track list. Listening, the songs that he picks, I mean, just about every song, you know, for the most part on this one.
Yeah. And also for the ones that probably weren't like household titles have since become that. I mean, now we all know that Paul showed John that he had prowess as a singer and a guitarist by playing 20 Flight Rock. So when this came out in Eddie Cochran's 20 Flight Rock, everybody is going, oh, wow. Yeah. That's an important song. That's a key song. Right. You know, that was like I lost my little girl of this record, you know, it's like, oh yeah, 20 Flight Rock is on here. But some of the other ones, like, you know, Kansas City, well, we kind of heard him do that before.
But when you hear him sing it here, I mean, it's nowhere near as ballsy or rough, though, that rough vocal that we've come to love.
You mean as the Beatles one?
Beatles for Sale.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the vocal. I mean, it's kind of like when John Reed did To Know Her on Rock and Roll. I kind of question, like, why he already did it perfectly on those BBC sessions.
Well, that production of that song is a whole different animal.
Well, true. But again, it's like, you know, you already did it perfect. Don't do it again.
Fair point. But obviously he wants to revisit some of these and reimagine it. There's that word again.
Right.
And some of the ones, you know, like Cracking Up, it was not terribly well known. I'm Gonna Be a Wheel Someday was not terribly well known.
No.
So in a way, you know, he kind of revived these songs, you know.
Right. But they weren't as obscure as some of the stuff that was on Run Double Run.
Both a question. How many of these did you know these songs? And David, you probably did as the former versions before they were on this. I didn't. I think I knew Ain't That a Shame. That was about it. Everything else to me, they might as well have been the McCartney original for my ears.
Yeah, I mean, you knew Midnight Special thanks to CCR for the most part.
Right.
You know, they made it big. You know, you knew Ain't That a Shame. He does a lot of fats on here. You knew that. Summertime, I even knew. You know, That's All Right, Mama. You know, Lucille, you know.
Yeah, I'd say about half. Like the more well-known, I mean, obviously Lottie Miss Claudie. I'm looking at it now. Lucille, of course.
Right.
Don't Get Around Much Anymore. Midnight Special. The songs that Elvis cut. Right. You would know that. But some of the other ones, you know, I have to say his version of Summertime is really good on here.
I agree.
That might be one of my, if I had to choose a top five out of here, that would be on there. In fact, I would say 20 Flight Rock, Ain't That a Shame. It's interesting that he was so fond of this record and it was such a success for him critically that he brought some of this material to the next tour and performed it. Yeah, that's you know, he did Ain't That a Shame.
Yeah.
And the sound check has Cracking Up, right?
Yep.
I knew some of these just because of other artists too. Like I knew Joe Cocker did a version of Lottie Miss Claudie. I think it was on his first record. You know, obviously, like I said, the CCR Midnight Special. So, you know, I probably like David, I knew, you know, I think maybe a little bit more than half. But then again, you know more from this one. I mean, the original was pretty much, I think it was just a 11 track.
Right.
And that's the thing. I didn't realize that till I was looking. I just thought the new one was the same as the old one. Tom's like, no, there's 14 on that one. There's only 11.
The one that we got in 91 ended up being the 14.
So David, do you know why there was more tracks on this than that?
Well, I think it was just value for money because it had already come out and it was something most people already had. Now the recent one where they just released it with the 11 tracks is to try and duplicate the original release, for what I would call, and don't take this the wrong way, Tom, I did not invent this term, okay? But now that I'm here with you, I'm going to say it. And I was this way too. Andy Partridge of XTC used this in an interview I did with him. He called himself a package slut. And what that means is if you're really into the packaging, if you really want, you know, a replica of the exact same original release, if you're right. someone who wants, you know, the tourist traveler's edition of Egypt Station, you are technically in, this is not me saying this, this is Andy Partridge, you are a package slut. So I think the new 11 track is for package sluts.
I'll take it. but yes, the 11 tracks was the first. When we got it in 91, then the vinyl was 13 tracks, okay? Mm. But the CD was 14 tracks.
Right.
Now, did your homework yeah. there, partner.
Right. So, but then again, there was also then a couple other tracks that went elsewhere, like I Want to Cry was on the this one.
My vinyl has 11 tracks, not 13.
Well, then you got then you got an earlier version then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See. Yeah, you got an earlier version.
But see, I only have the one, folks. And my yeah. Max LUR 90, which...
Now, that was just a pre-recorded tape, like a tape of a tape, or an actual, the yeah. actual cassette?
No, it was a Max LUR 90. It was a guy just dubbed off
a record right. onto right. a tape for you. And
right,
you
that like, was... Yeah. And I paid, yeah, like $7 to $10 for, that was my edition. I had the,
do you still have it?
No, but I want to release it myself. We'll call it the Strange Man in a Hotel Room edition the Russian album. And, it comes with the Strange Man and a hotel room key.
I swear that same guy was there like at Beatlefest years later when I started going. It was like the same exact scenario you laid out. Elevator,
right? Yes.
Crazy guy in a room yeah, at a right, table with freaking right. bootlegs. I swear, yeah. you're describing the same situation that I would, you know, it was like something right out of like, you know, a horror film or like, you know, like those shows on right. NBC, To Catch a Predator. That's what it sounds
yes,
like.
Yes, exactly. Like. Right. And we all went willingly like lambs to slaughter.
Okay. And, okay. It's here. Let's go. Right.
The Piper, man, you guys were
no. You know, the only thing though, I was young enough. I brought my dad with me, so no.
To
no
my yeah, it's you know, in, it's
yeah. you know.
Oh, okay. But yeah, no. If he had said, you know, I have an unreleased John Lennon song in the trunk of my car, I would have gone out to the car with him at that point. You know, it would have been without any hesitation. You know,
yeah. It's a big van. You know, yeah,
right, yeah.
Oh my God.
Anyways, but another track that wasn't used was Paul's version of It's Now or Never that ended up on the last temptation of Elvis.
Of Elvis,
you know, in 1990.
Same session.
So a lot of that stuff ended up making out. I think the only one of the very few that didn't get out was they did do a version of I Saw Her Standing There, and that's yet to be released. But let's talk about the band real quick that appeared on here. Some very familiar names. You got Paul, you got Mick Green, you got Mikey Gallagher, and then you got Chris Whitten, who ended up becoming the drummer for the Flowers in the Dirt era. He did the 89 tour. Testing out people, getting people in, maybe getting ready for a tour, because he had talked as early as 86 on a couple talk shows that he was looking to tour again.
Right.
And credit.
Right.
I'm just going to say credit to Chris Whitten, because he was the whippersnapper of that group. He came from Julian Cope's band, and they just had that World Shut Your Mouth was the album, and it was a big, big record. And for him to adapt so well to those songs, I don't know much about Chris Whitten, because I don't think he speaks much to anybody.
Hold hold the phone on that. We might have some news on that down the line. But but it's funny though with this. He recorded over two.
I'm just curious if he knew that material or you know.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, if we get him on, we'll definitely ask him.
But he recorded with two different bass players and drummers, though. on this.
Right. So what the people I just named, the players I named in that was for July 20th. That was the first day.
Right.
Okay. So on that first day, they record Kansas City, 20 Flight Rock, Lottie Miss Claudie, I'm in Love Again, Bring It On Home to Me, Lucille, I'm Going to Be a Wheel Someday, That's All Right, Mama, Summertime, Just Because, Midnight Special, and It's Now or Never. So a lot of tracks all there right. for that first day.
Stupid question. Why did he use two different sets of bands over two different days?
Again, like David said, probably to test them out, see, you know, with the fresh blood out there, they can get like on a tour or in a band, you know, mm-hmm. So, you know, makes sense to me. You know, I mean, Johnny Marr was Marr from the Smiths was even part of this as well, but he didn't make it on any of the recordings. So,
wow.
The second day, July 21st, we got Paul, we got Dick Garvey, we got Mickey Gallagher again, and then Henry Spinetta. You know, so in what they record there, we got Ain't That a Shame, Don't Get Around Much Anymore, Cracking Up, and the new composition, I Want to Cry. So,
which Andy's not a big fan of that one.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Do not like that track.
I thought it's fine. But again, you know, that first release was Russian only. Again, you know, so production-wise, I mean, it just doesn't sound good like we talked about earlier. And I think, for me, I think that's really
it doesn't sound good now, but I think people liked it back then. You know what I'm saying? I think like David listened to this album back then and he was excited by it. Like he enjoyed it, you know, but now we're like 30 some odd years later, other albums. And it's like, man, that really sounds dated and flat, you know, but at the time it's new McCartney and you get caught up in the honeymoon of the whole thing, you know?
Right. And not to completely segue to Run Devil Run, but I also think it suffers in comparison to the record that came after it, because once you hear Run Devil Run, maybe you don't listen to the Russian album with quite the same enthusiasm.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, he's doing covers again. Well, he really kicks ass on this record. I'm not going back to the other one.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'd only go back to this for nostalgia.
And I think he is
pretty faithful to those covers that, you know, to those songs. I mean, specifically the ones that he grew up listening to. I mean, because obviously, you know, a bunch of people have done these songs as well. But, you know, he is pretty faithful to Ain't That a Shame, the Fats Domino song. You know, he is pretty faithful. Yes. To,
yeah. Those are pretty faithful renditions straight off. Right. You know, they for the most part, they are.
Yeah. So, okay, going on to Run Devil Run, the release in October 99. Again, now, you know, going back to his roots but different reasons, unfortunately. You know, he's now a little bit over a year since Linda's passing and, you know, needed something to, you know, maybe take Linda off his mind. And, you know, what does he do? He goes back to all these songs that he knows and loves. You know, he's got this terrific band with him. You know, I mean, you can't, you know, Gilmore, you know, Mick Green again, Ian Pace, Pete Wingfield, Dave Maddox, our buddy Dave Maddox that we've had on the show, and then Garrett Watkins. You know, co-produced by Chris Thomas, which I think was really cool because, you know, I don't know about you, but I mean, in a way that some of these songs kind of sound a little punkish.
Right.
And like that may be thanks to Chris Thomas, who, you know, who has, you know, history working with the, you know, Sex Pistols, you know, a little bit. So I don't know if you guys get that with that as well. But Dave, I mean, was this a track, was this a release that you were excited about as well when it came out?
You know, I remember this when it came out. For some reason, I didn't hear a lot of pre-release hype about it. I just sort of walked into a Tower Records and there it was. And I really wasn't thrilled because by that time, maybe I wasn't quite as enthusiastic about the Russian album. And I thought, oh, he's kind of doing it again. And then I put it on. And by the time we got to the second track, she said, yeah. I mean, so many people have done these kind of records. You know, it's not uncommon for a rocker to get to a certain age and they either do a standards album, which right. Paul has also done, or they do, you know, an album of their rock and roll favorites, or they suddenly start talking about how much they love the blues and do a blues album. You know, that's a, you know, it's like, oh, really? You love the blues? Since when?
Right.
but this is head and shoulders above any other attempt to revive this material, because do this, you really need like a certain amount of passion and fury, and it needs grit and it needs right. energy. And these tracks, I don't know if I stuttered there, if the video went out a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. These tracks have, you know, all the energy in the world. It's the piss and vinegar that this material really needs.
Right.
Yes, it does. It really does. It's a weird one, because there's some really, really deep cuts on here. There's some great, there's some, the well-known ones, obviously All Shook Up, but then you know, you've got stuff like No Other Baby, which are obscure B-sides, which, you know, it's like some of these other ones, Coquette, like, again, I knew about half these songs, never heard of the other half of them. And I'm like, I have no desire to even hear the original versions now, because this is good enough as it is, you know?
Yeah. And when he's doing something like All Shook Up, he completely reinvents it. It's not a note for note cover of Elvis's version. Right. It's right. the McCartney punk rock version. And, you know, and we talked about this before. I liked John Lennon's rock and roll album when it came out, well, not when it came out, but first time I heard it, which would have been in the late 70s. And then I disliked it for a while, and now I'm sort of coming back around to it. But, you know, half of that album suffers from an experimentation that just seems like poor decision-making. Some of it's like if Ed Wood was the producer. I know Phil Spector is the guy, but, you know, to take Do You Want to Dance and Slow It Down, why? And some of the production on that is... it's like John Lennon wading through molasses and everything's really slow. And I mentioned this last time, half of it sounds like the closing music to Saturday Night Live when they say their goodnights at the end and the band goes, bah, bah, bah,
bah, bah. Yes.
Half of that album sounds like that. And coincidentally, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, which predates the opening to Saturday Night Live, sounds like the theme music at the very beginning of Saturday Night Live. Just next time, folks, just say, live from New York, it's Saturday night, and then play Whatever Gets You Through the Night, and it's perfect, you know. But this one, all the chances that were taken, which include having some original music on here, which would, you know, bear comparison to these classic songs. So that's a little ballsy for Paul to do. But yeah, ballsy is the word. This one, this Run Devil Run, runs circles, no pun intended, over anybody else's attempt to do this. Any kind of 50s rock pastiche. I mean, this is not, and I say this with all love and respect, this is not Sha Na Na. You know, this is just an awesome kick-ass rock and roll record.
Oh, agreed 100%. You know, everything from the band, which, you know, when I first heard Gilmore was going to be a part of this, I was kind of like shocked in a way, because I would have never thought of Gilmore as you know this kind of playing, you know, and he fits in so perfectly. And, you know, you definitely tell that, you know, Paul and Gilmore are definitely in sync on this release. I love the track listing on this one as well. Maybe not as much as the Russian album, but, you know, and again, the fact that he's doing three originals on here too. Now, when you listen to these three originals, being a, you know, a person that, you know, plays a lot of 50s, you know, rock and roll, I mean, what do you think? How do you think do they fit in with the rest of the songs here?
I think they're perfect. I think, you know, lyrically, he's evoking Chuck Berry in a lot of this stuff. I mean, Run Devil Run is just, that's just an awesome rock and roll song. And these could easily pass for, I mean, maybe Try Not to Cry is a little modern sounding in a way. I don't know if that would have flown back in 1953 or whatever, but all of this stuff His songwriting is top notch. He's really inspired by this material. And I like the song What It Is. I've always thought that that is such a catchy pop rock, I mean, power pop song, really. Right. Like, I wish that was a more well-known cut. I wish people covered it. You know, there you go, indie rockers, cover What It Is. You know, yeah. All that, even that stuff about like a honeybee and all that is really of the era when that kind of comparison or metaphor was used in songs. And it's just, it's just got a lot of grit to it. But because Linda's passed, some of these songs have an emotional resonance in his singing that you don't really get. You hadn't really got since Here Today. I mean, you know, Lonesome Town.
Lonesome Town.
Oh, God.
Like Lonesome Town, it's the sadness is masked in the delivery of the song, like Lonesome Town. It really is.
Yeah. And especially with No Other Baby, too, I think, is definitely really feel the emotion.
Very, it's very interesting when you think about, I mean, I can remember when Linda passed, everything that happened with it. The last thing you expected to happen, I did anyway, was that he was going to come out and do a balls to the wall 50s style cover album, you know, and that's, but that's, you know, I guess we really shouldn't be too surprised. I was as a kid, I was only 17 or 18 at the time, but it was like, whoa, another album. Is it going to be original material? No, it's going to be this crazy covers album with this high energy, high volume max and you know, working through his grief, really, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hate to think like that because I don't want to assume what McCartney's mindset was, but I can hear it on this record. I mean, it is grief. You know, it's a guy who's like, I'm so angry at the world. I need to blow off steam.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to work through all of this sadness and all of this anger, you know, anger at the fates or anger at my life situation. And just, I mean, this is like, it's like McCartney doesn't cover these songs as much as beat them up. You know, every
that's
song.
A great,
is
that's
just,
a great analogy. That's a great analogy.
Yeah, every song is just like it's a knockout, literally.
Yeah, right. even the ballads. I mean, even the ballads are just hammered, they're just hammered out. You know, there's nothing soft or plain or vanilla about any of the tracks on this record.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorites on here, then, David?
Right, with No Other Baby, when you met No Other Baby. And No Other Baby, you can hear it when it's like he goes like No Other Baby, but yeah, he's like screaming. It is very punk rock at the end. There's really not anything. I mean, She Said Yeah is just awesome, you know. Run Devil Run, No Other Baby, Lonesome Town, Try Not to Cry. I mean, maybe the ones that don't quite work are Blue Jean Bop and Movie Mag, the sort of like acoustic ones, but I mean, I'd rather have them than not, you know. Yeah. Maybe the album would be too relentless if it didn't have
a little bit of a break,
a little
something
more fun,
lighter. Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah. See, I do appreciate Blue Jean Bop, especially his opening vocals and just how smooth they are, and you know the little bass that he's playing, you know, before you know he gets Blue Jean, but you know all that stuff.
Right.
But I don't know if I like it as an opening track. You know, on this album, you know, maybe something like She Said Yeah.
She Said Yeah. That probably would have been a better opener.
Maybe made a better opening, you know, track for this release. But yeah, stuff like, you know, I Got Stung. I love the Elvis stuff that he does. I mean, I think he does a great job with Elvis, and he does a great job with Fats Domino too, with Coquette.
You know, Coquette. Stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the stuff. And then, you know, I do want to point out that, you know, this release from 2007, that's Domino tribute. And he does a version of I Want to Walk You Home, which is just incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
So, but then what do you got in your hand there, Andy?
So this was another, like, just a single from the album that came out, No Other Baby. But then you had the bonus track of Fabulous on this as well, which that, too pity, that wasn't on the main album, too, because he does a great version of that song as well. And again, I didn't even know it before Paul's version. It just didn't. I didn't know that song.
Right.
I like the fact that all of us kept our fake hype sticker on this, the original jewel case.
Tom loves hype stickers. He loves hype stickers. He loves them.
Anyways, well, unfortunately, the hype sticker was peeling off this. So I unfortunately had to peel it off because you know, it wasn't wrapped or anything like that. But I mean, the surface doesn't really, you know, hold well for any kind of sticker, unless it's like Gorilla Glue or something like that.
Right.
But this set is really cool. I mean, this is a UK release only, and this was all the tracks, including Fabulous. But you know, on 45s, you know, it's a really cool set.
Yeah.
Someday we have to go ahead.
Go ahead, David. You go ahead.
I was just going to say, someday, Tom, we need to pool our resources and have the ultimate, like, geek yard sale. You know, and you have to be, you have to prove your mettle as a music fan. You have to answer a series of trivia questions to attend the yard sale. Yeah, because we want to make sure that only the right kind of, you know, fellow geeks. Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my
thought. I
have to just say, as a comment about this period as a whole, you know, it was the first time he's appeared and done anything really since Linda's past. But the promotional activities that are associated with this, he did live appearances. He did a show at the Cavern. The music videos that he did one for Lone, the Cavern, of which my friends were at that show in Liverpool. I mean, so the videos for, you know, Brown Eyed Handsome Man. So he really threw himself into the vehicle of promotion for this record and everything associated with it, you know, at that time. You know, so that was nice to see. It was like, okay, he's back. He's making videos. Right. He's doing live appearances. He sang Lonesome Town live, I think, at that a memorial concert for Linda.
Right.
So, you know, that was just a lot of activity thrust back into it after kind of, you know, laying low for a while, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a little bit of therapy as well, just like doing the album was therapy, you know, getting out there, you know, talking about it, you know, talking about, you know, his love for Linda. And I, cause I think, I know he said that she loves this music just as much as he did. So, I mean, she was a huge fan of this genre of music. So it was really good to, you know, see him out and about and doing all that stuff and not just, you know, moping I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, just him, you know, being depressed for the rest of his life. You know, you're glad, you can have your year of sadness and grief, but I love that he just, you know, came out with this. You know, I thought it was a perfect release for his first release after, you know, Linda's passing.
Yeah, and you know, from this point on, I don't think he's ever returned to any of these songs live like he did with the Russian 93? Album, right?
No. No,
but after this, he's never done oldies. Has he done oldies in concert?
Not in concert.
Not like this level. I mean, not to that extent, you know. So it'd be, you know, he hasn't. I don't know, maybe the occasional sound check song, but
Yeah,
but not as a staple of his sets, you know. I know no other baby. Actually, they did it as a sound check in '93. I think you know, with the Off the Ground band. No, I don't think so. So it's a capsule in time that, you know, it's there that's it. That's 99, 2000 Paul. And that's where he was at. And that's why, you know, it's kind of cool to dive back and look at this stuff and be like, this is where he was at then. And this record, I mean, it just, everything about it. I mean, like Run Devil Run, what is this going to be? I remember thinking the title came out and I'm like, what is this going to be? You know?
Right. Even the album cover, you're looking at it and you're like, what? Quickie Drugs, Mart.
Right. Like,
what is this all about?
What is this about? Oh, it's going to be a covers album, but there's also going to be a couple of original songs in there. Okay. We'll give it a shot.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So it's, no, I think this one is with 20 plus years now. This one has aged considerably.
Oh, yeah.
This is still fresh and you could put it on in your car or whatever. And it's still just, it kicks ass and it has everything to it that, you know, the Russian album. Tom, I think, likes the Russian album a little bit more. I think he does anyway, but
I just, the only thing I like more on Russian album than I do on Run Devil Run is the track list. I just think it's a more common, you know, more well-known track list than Run Devil Run.
Well, I think I guess with the Russian album, he'd blown through some of the more well-known cuts. So he was kind of limited as to what he could do with this one. But I mean, Yeah, I mean, well, All Shook Up is well known, and Brown Eyed Handsome Man is well known, and Shake a Hand used to be well known,
right?
And so did Party, you know, because Elvis, you know. But to me, this is like, you know, this is, I would put this Run Devil Run in McCartney's solo catalog. For me, this is a top 10, maybe even top 5 album. Yeah.
Awesome. Wow.
In terms of
high praise. Very cool. That's cool to see that ranking. Do you think it's worthy of any kind of archive re-release or repackaging?
Well, I mean, for the sake of Tom, yes. But I think it needs to be reappraised. I think it's this album, for whatever reason, just did not have, even though Paul did that promotion, it did not have the visibility,
power.
Right?
No staying power. Do you know what it did charted, Tom or David?
Yeah, it charted 27 here in the States, and then in UK it went to 12. So better there. I mean, that was the period of time where the UK stuff was charting better.
Well, that's still right. That's kind of still the case, except a little bit for the most part. But no staying power. And that was just it was out, and that, it just dropped, and that was it. But I think a box reappraisal of this is, you know, so much you can throw the cavern. You can throw the cavern show. Throw the cavern show in there, and
absolutely.
I mean, that was actually on DirecTV back in the day.
You have to wonder though if McCartney would want to revisit this time period because of what
it meant to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Right. Good point. I think he might. I mean, it's funny how you look at these projects and sometimes he embraces them and sometimes he just distances himself.
Right.
You know, is this one of those where he might say, I'm not really sure. Like, does he feel that way about London Town and Back to the Egg? Is that why he hasn't touched those, you know?
I think he does, unfortunately. Yeah.
Right. Well, hopefully that's his team. That's his camp. I mean, hopefully they're pushing him to...
Right, but they have to kind of come up with the spin. Okay, what's the spin?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the spin for this package going to be? Well, Linda passed, and this is where I was at. Okay, well, what else can we spin? Well, I played at the Cavern. Okay, we can package that. We can sell that. It's how is his marketing team going to, you know, make this marketable in 2021, 22, and beyond?
Right. Because, I mean, the one when, you know, when he was, you know, putting out all of his albums again, reissuing his albums once he signed with Capitol. I mean, the last thing I was expecting was, a Russian album re-release.
Reissue, yeah.
You know, reissue, you know, and I mean, so, I mean, especially on the, you know, the nice yellow.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wasn't expecting that. So, I mean, it is possible that we could get another reissue or an archive set. I mean, I would, you know, again, I've said it before, I would love an archive set for every release.
Yeah.
Even a Thrillington archive set?
No.
Well, I mean, that's a little different. I mean, but it was included in the RAM box set.
Yes, so, that's true. Yeah.
So, I mean, that really is, you know,
I think, to David's point earlier, I think that the indie artist factor, if this were to come out again, I think those artists would flock to this and really be jazzed up by a lot of the music on this because they probably don't know it.
Or why not a box with both of them? You know, that could be your hook. You know, McCartney does the classic songs he grew up with. You know, you can put them both together.
Yeah. David, any opinion on the fact that, because I've heard this argument before, that John was the first one to rush and do a covers album way before it became popular to do so. Paul does it much, much later. So therefore his attempts aren't really as valid as John's. Do you buy any stock into that argument?
No, because John's record was made almost under duress. You know, it was the result of a lawsuit more than, you know, his willingness to go in and do it. And then it has such a dramatic story behind it with Spector and the tapes and everything. And I mean, maybe that exists in the minds of fans, but I don't think there's any real, there's no reality to that. I mean, that rock and roll revival was happening around that time, you know, the Let the Good Times Roll movie and all of that.
Sure.
So
That'll Be the Day.
Right. All of this stuff was going on. So that was more a part of that movement. When McCartney was doing the Russian album, there really was nothing going on. I mean, I guess we can give Lennon credit for being the first of the 60s rockers to, you know, fetishize his childhood. You know, like we give Ringo credit for Sentimental Journey, you know, for indirectly starting
that whole trend of doing
that standards. Whole trend. Yeah.
No, I've seen that kind of back and forth over the years, you know, Paul's doing covers albums now, and John did it in the '70s, way before anybody else. So his should be thought of better. And I kind of agree with you. It's apples and oranges, really.
Yeah. I mean, you could say, well, you know, Eddie Cochran was writing these songs, and who's John Lennon to come along and do some sort of pastiche, you know?
Right.
So there's, yeah. So, I mean, it's just, they just did it. They put it out, you know, you can compare them if you like. And I mean, I did a little bit talking about Lennon's record. I just go off and on with that record. And, you know, I'm the same way with the Russian album, but I just take it at face value. And for me, this is your face value right here, people.
Yes,
this is the album to get.
Right. Yeah. And he has revisited this stuff from time to time on other, like, you know, on other people's compilations or albums. Like he did the, you know, Bring It On Home to Me on a George Benson mm-hmm. Al Jarreau CD. You know, he did, let's see here, it's, I should know Side by Heart, but why am I looking? And that's All Right, Mama.
Oh, the right.
Sun, yeah, oh, yes, right.
On the Sun.
He did with the, you know, the original drummer and guitar player on here, you know, so that's just right. Phenomenal. You can watch the video of this on YouTube. He did, you know, It's All Right for his MPL production of Buddy Holly, a tribute album, which he really took a lot of liberties on that one, and that's just not a favorite of mine at all.
Which one was that, Tom?
The Buddy Holly one where he did It's So Easy.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I have a promotional single of that. Yeah. And you know what this does say, though, is that it. I was thinking about this. You know, for those guys, for the Beatles and other musicians of their age, I mean, they're sort of hardcore fans of that era of music, like we are of like their 60s output. Mm-hmm. So McCartney and Lennon probably would be like, what is that album? Rubber Soul, Revolver, who cares? You know, I mean, to me, it's all about That's All Right, Mama. And it's all about Good Rockin' Tonight. I mean, they, to their credit, you know, I mean, I always say that John Lennon wore an Elvis pin on his lapel unironically. You know, he wore it because he was super into Elvis. And McCartney, you know, has Bill Black's bass, which right. he plays, I believe, on that Sun. And he owns it because he's such a, you know, a mega fan right. of that music. So, you know, comparing, well, you know, Lennon did it. Well, McCartney did it. These guys are all going to do it.
That's they were all going to do it because that's they right. loved it. Yeah,
right. They loved this. They never stopped loving it. Like most people, the music that you was out that you were into when you were in high school is kind of going to be it for the rest of right. your life. You know, like that's you're going to be like, I'm totally into this. And you know, unreleased Beatles songs probably don't mean much to Paul and Ringo, but like an unreleased Eddie Cochran song, they'd probably they be would, like, oh my God. Yeah.
Right.
Let's hear it. Right.
Yeah. They'd move heaven and earth to get to it.
Like right. 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 Exactly.
Yeah. He did produce a special that, I mean, that is on YouTube. People can check it out. And it's called the Real Buddy Holly Story. And it looked like it was about the 86, 87, yeah. you know, year mark where, you know, he narrates a lot of it. You know, he appears on it. So check that out. I think it's in four or five parts. Don't quote me on that, but I mean, you can watch the whole thing. And the only thing is it's in segments. So it's like 10, 13, 14 minute segments per block. So you can check that out as well. And just going to kind of get a sense of, you know, how much he loves Buddy Holly, because we all know he owns Buddy, the right. rights to Buddy Holly's catalog. You know, so that's something else you guys can check out as well.
I think he was unhappy with the Gary Busey movie, the liberties taken with the story, right?
Yeah.
So that's why. So the Buddy Holly story, he was not a fan of, hence the real Buddy Holly story.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
You know, for all of the Buddy Holly fanboys out there, this is the real story. Yeah.
This is the real Well, very cool. Well, thank you, David, for coming on and talking about
these two,
you know, one wonderful and one so-so album.
Well, you know, before I go, before I'm dismissed from the two legs, and then this, my little picture will disappear, and then you'll both talk to each other. What? Why did we have him on? The question I have for you guys is about the name of your show. And this, now, you know, the McCartney song Three Legs, I've often heard people say, this is McCartney sticking it to the other Beatles with this song. This is some sort of a criticism.
Right.
And, you know, I consider myself pretty well read on Beatles history and everything. And I still don't get that. I still don't understand that, because wouldn't it make more sense if John, George, or Ringo had recorded a song called Three Legs, like My Dog, He's Got Three Legs, because yeah, there's three of them against Paul. So when Paul's referring to the three legs, what is he referring to? You know, My Dog, He Got Three Legs, Your Dog, He Got One. Who is he talking to?
Well, it
doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's the one thing is like the theory of is like it's a him versus them type thing. Is like, you know, his dog, he's got one, like, you know, his dog's got three, you know, so it's kind of like three against one is in a way, you know, theory of the song. But I don't think he's ever come out and actually said, you know, what the song is actually about, or the fact that it's, is it about the other three? You know, I mean,
well,
the three legs kind of, you know, when I switched it to two legs, I mean, I kind of based it on that theory, where if it's about, you know, individuals, okay, well, there's two co-hosts, so I'm just going to switch it to two, because, you know, in theory, he's talking about the other three.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Well, so, but it's, that's the thing, though, because McCartney says, my dog, he got three legs, meaning McCartney is talking about himself. Is it Linda and Heather? I mean, are they included in that equation?
Right.
And your dog, he got one, unless... Right. He's singing from the perspective of John or one of the other Beatles. I've never figured it out. However, I do enjoy Two Legs. This I have no problem understanding. There's two of you, and you know, you're talking back and forth, and occasionally there will be a third leg, which is this, and sometimes even a fourth. You know, you could have the more the merrier. 12 legs. That'll be the next one. Yeah, the caterpillar program.
Right, you go, centipede. Remind people where they can find you and again about your show.
The show's called The Vintage Rock and Pop Shop, and it airs every Sunday at noon Eastern Time on WFDU.FM or 89.1 WFDU-FM in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. And you can always just go to YouTube and hear the past interviews that have been on the show.
Gotcha. And I mean, you want people to find you on Facebook or anything like that, or just want to be left alone?
Don't care. I have too many people. They can find me on Facebook. It's what is it? Oh, it's David Ghosty Wills on Facebook. Yeah, because I used to be just Ghosty, and then at some point, Facebook decided that I had to provide them with my driver's license and all sorts of stuff. Luckily, my middle initial is G, so I could get away with saying David Ghosty Wills. I should legally change it. It should be David Ghosty Ono Wills.
You should.
You know, that way I really get my...
You'll check all the Beetle boxes.
Yeah, all the Beetle boxes will be checked.
Yeah.
Next, I'll be in the hotel room inviting people up.
Yes, you will. So, no, this was a lot of fun, David. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
You got it. You got it. So, Andy, what else is going on, my friend?
Not much. Our subscriptions are up to 530 somewhat on YouTube. So, those are, you know, checking up, and our episodes drop weekly. So, the YouTube thing is going well. And Ranking the Tracks is doing well. So you tell everybody what we're doing with that, Thomas.
Yeah. So, you know, Ranking the Tracks, you know, by the time This comes up. We'll be ranking what the 90s.
Yeah,
we
no,
had to skip a
no,
week. So
no, we'll be ranking Flaming Pie.
Flaming Pie. Yes, that's right. So great. I mean, that's going to be a tough one, tough album to rank right there. I kind of know what my least favorite is, but everything else is going to be difficult. Oh yeah, it's tough. Great. Yeah, it'll be a difficult album to rank, but one that I'll be happy to do. Love listening to that album every chance I get. So check that out. That's Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And please check us out and please subscribe. So you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. And you can also find our website, twolegspodcast.com. So yeah, we got that. We're going to, in a future episode, like we're talking, we're going to keep this kind of conversation going, and we're going to revisit the Live at the Cavern Club DVD set. So be on the lookout for that in a couple of weeks. And man, what a thank you, Ghosty, again for coming on. And you know, I've really been wanting to have you on for a while now, and I'm glad you stopped by, and then hopefully we'll see you again in the future. And so for David, for Andy, I'm Tom. And as always, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night.
You've been listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan C.